Hi, everyone. This is Steve Harrison. I want to welcome you to this call. Today, John Kramer and I are going to give you what we believe to be some of the very best ways to market your book. John's incredible book, 1001 Ways, gives you such a breath, and I think a lot of people wonder, well, what are some of the best ones to focus on, and that's what we're going to help you do on this call. First, I do want to congratulate you for being on this call, because even though we may not have met you personally yet, you are in the top 5% of what you do, even if you're just getting started as an author, because we know that, you know, some people see a book, they don't buy it. Some people buy it but never read it. Some people read it but never do anything. And that small percentage of people who are really serious read it or aggressively skim it and take some action. And you clearly have done that by being on that call. So we know that you're serious about where you want to go and that you already are ahead of so many authors because, thanks to John's great book, you realize that marketing is the key. And so what we want to do is help you focus today. John, welcome to the call.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, one of the things that I think people do wonder about is, you know, how can they sort out the 1001 ways? You've got a lot of great stuff. I know I've got several articles, you know, in your book. And if you were to break it down to maybe some key categories and that we could talk about today, what would you say are kind of the key areas that people should pay attention to?
Well, depending on the book, there are five key areas that I normally steer people to doing in terms of marketing. One is bookstore sales. Two is publicity. Three is speaking. Four is marketing via the internet. And five is direct marketing and special sales.
Yeah.
And most of the key ways that we're going to talk about today fall into one of those five categories.
Yeah. Yeah, and so what category do you want to talk about first? We'll make this a fun, kind of informal conversation, but what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I think we would just start with bookstore sales, since a lot of people think of that as the first outlet
okay. In
terms of marketing books. It's not the fastest, and it's not the best, necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
but it can be. For example, one of the best ways to work with bookstores is to do a mini tour in your local area and really work the bookstores in your local area. And that means in the region. If you're in a small town like I am, you want to reach out to some of the bigger cities around. But what you want to do is you want to help them to sell more books. So you want to do an event that's not just a signing, but some sort of reading or talk, so that you really give them the value that you want, you know, in terms of bringing people into the store, which is the main reason they do events.
Yeah, so somebody like who has a book on massage, rather than saying I'm going to do a book signing, maybe they would actually do some type of massage demonstration, or, you know, couples massage demonstration or something like that.
Something like that, or three key ways to relieve stress at your desk.
Yeah.
Something like that. Where they can show very easily, you know, if you press your thumbprint here, you know, you can relieve stress and control your eye fatigue or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Those kinds of demonstrations really will draw in the people that are in the store to come and hear you. And that's what you want to have happen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And if you do a good bookstore tour, you can actually sell a lot of books. There's at least one case history of a guy selling 3,000 books in about 6 weeks in the Boston area alone. And it was a print-on-demand book. But he did it through bookstores.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you and I both know is the power of being local. I've helped a lot of people, as you know, get publicity in our radio, TV, Interview Report magazine, and just doing consulting. And, you know, everybody comes to me, and I'm sure they come to you, too, and you're helping them with food, and say, hey, I want to get on Oprah, you know. And what they don't realize is that the way to get on Oprah is first to build your experience and your reputation locally and get that training. And the thing is, the local TV, the local radio, the local newspapers, they have to interview people from their local area. So it's and it's going to be so much easier for you to get publicity locally. And, you know, I know one of the things that you talk about, I was just, when you were at my Million Dollar Author Conference, you did a, I was just watching a clip today, by the way, where you were talking about bookstores and how they have money to spend if you're on local authors. Remember that part about, we're really putting you on the spot. You said something about on the call about local authors, and don't believe it if they tell you that they don't have a budget.
Okay. what I was saying is that the chain stores, the local chain, local stores of the various chain stores can buy and have a budget to buy books from local authors and regional authors.
Yeah.
And so that means that they have the money to spend to buy your books. You don't have to give it to them.
Uh-huh.
They should buy it and put it on their shelves because that's part of their mission to help to localize their stores.
Uh-huh.
This is especially true for the chains, but of course the local independents should be even stronger at this because that's one of the things that can help to distinguish them from other kinds of stores.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have a great strength by being a local author, because you're helping the bookstore to get more publicity as you bring people into the store and you do the publicity to tie into it. The neat thing about having a bookstore event is that now you have a peg to tie the news story onto, because you're going to be appearing somewhere. Now the newspaper can interview you because you're going to be doing something in the local area.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be a bookstore. It could be another talk at somewhere else, but bookstores is where you're going to usually find the best sales, but not always.
That's good. Anything else related to bookstores that would be helpful?
There's at least three other things that I do want to mention. One is that to get involved in what are called the BookSense mailing. BookSense is the marketing program or trademark identity program for independent bookstores. And if you go to BookSense.com, you can find out about their white box and red box mailings. And these are mailings that you can participate in for a fairly low fee and get your book exposed to a lot of bookstores. And it can be a very effective way to work with bookstores to help to promote your book and get it out there and get it on the shelves of stores and get people starting to talk about it. And the details on how to do that are there at BookSense.com. The third thing that I'd like to really encourage people to do, if they're really marketing through bookstores, is to advertise in some of the email newsletters that go out to bookstores. And among those are ones like Shelf Awareness, Publisher's Lunch, the Bookselling This Week, which is from the American Booksellers Association, and then PW Daily, which is from Publishers Weekly. And all of those, the contact information for those are on my bookmarket.com website or in my book. But any one of those are great places to expose yourself to a lot of people very quickly.
You know, in your experience, John, who would you say has been the best? Like if I were to ask you for the best person at really selling through the bookstores, maybe doing events in the bookstores and having that lead to sales, who kind of comes to mind and what did they do?
Boy, you sure did put me on the spot there.
Because I know, hey, look, I know you can handle it.
but the question is, I'm not sure if there's somebody who's the best at that.
Okay. Who have you seen has been really good? Because, I mean, I know there are a lot of people there are people that say, look, you know, I did a book signing, nobody showed up, and they obviously didn't do it right.
Right, and there's a lot of that happens.
Yeah.
Or two people show up, or four people show up, or you, you know. But the first thing is you don't want to do a book signing because nobody shows up for book signings unless you're famous.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do, and then thousands of people will sometimes show up.
Mm-hmm.
But as an unknown author, you have to do a reading or a demonstration or something like that.
Yeah.
To get people involved.
Because when people read about that in the paper, they say, oh, you know, somebody's going to be
doing something interesting, providing me with some useful information. And then you can get people to come, and then you can sell books, because the moment they see you in the bookstore talking about your book and you do say anything interesting, they're going to want to follow up with your book.
Yeah.
This is true whether it's nonfiction or fiction, because the only way to sell poetry books, for example, is to get out there and speak in front of people, to do readings, to get people to hear your poetry, and if they get excited about hearing your poetry, they'll want to buy your book.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have no incentive to do so and will never do it.
And if somebody was just trying to think of it, the steps on, well, if I want to do a book signing, is it a question of, they're asking themselves, do I just go into, is it better to go after independent stores than chain stores, or am I more likely to have success at a Borders and Barnes & Noble?
Quite honestly, in my experience, it seems like the Borders and Barnes & Nobles are more open to unknown authors than the independents, which is really a shame.
Yeah, that would be.
But it seems to be the case, and it's really bad form on the part of the independent bookstores, because it's the unknown authors, it's the people that, the mission of a good independent bookstore is to help their customers discover new authors.
Yeah.
That's what it should be.
Right.
But they don't seem to understand that all the time. Sometimes, some of the good ones do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like working with them. But there are others that just don't seem to understand that at all. But the key thing, if you're going to go into a bookstore and do a bookstore signing or an event, is you've got to work with them to get the media attention.
Mm-hmm.
And that means one of the things you might ask them is, do you have a media list of people that you work with on a regular basis? Can I help you make contacts with them? Because if you work with the bookstore, then you have a chance to make that event actually meaningful.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to be meaningful. And that means that ideally, you're going to schedule it 3 to 4 months in advance of your publication date or whatever, because the bookstore needs time to put it into their quarterly newsletter or whatever they might have, get it into their email newsletters, get it up on their website to promote it, and things like that. Your job as an author is to give them the material to make that interesting. In other words, a photo of you, a photo of the book, a good summary of the book, perhaps even doing a short interview on their website about, your topic or why you wrote the book, if it's a novel, something like that.
Uh-huh. I like
that. And then the fourth major point that I wanted to make under bookstore sales was to become their friend, to really work with them to bring more people into the stores and help them to sell more books. Again, to helping them to do the publicity for your event, or by helping them to reach out into the local community to sell your book to bookstores, doctor's offices, I mean, not bookstores, other businesses, doctor's offices, accounting offices, schools, and so on. Rather than doing all of that yourself, make the bookstore your friend, and then they will start to actually order your book in quantity, and will actually then stock the book in the bookstore for a longer period of time, if you're working with them to help them make sales outside of the bookstore. And all the independent bookstores are interested in making more sales outside the bookstore. It's a little bit tougher to work with Barnes & Noble and Borders on that. Some of the stores are more active on that, some are not. But you can sell a lot of books if you actually team up with a good bookstore. If a bookstore falls in love with your book, they can sell 500 or 1,000 copies of a book. They've done it over and over again. Even a small bookstore in the hinterlands will sell 500 copies of a book if they like it and they like the author.
Because what are some of the things that they then what are some of the things they would then start doing? If they like your book, they like you.
They tend to give you better display space in the bookstore. They put your book in the hands of anybody who asks them about a good gift or a good book to read, things like that. Or they'll recommend it to, and the fifth way that you can actually work with bookstores to sell books is to work with the reading groups that are often hosted with the bookstores. This is especially important for novels, but can also be important for poetry and for some nonfiction, especially memoirs and things like that. And reading groups can be very very strong advocates for your book if they fall in love with it. Because a good reading group is going to have anywhere from 5 to 20 members, and they're all going to be reading your book during a particular month, discussing it, and if they really like it, they're going to be telling all kinds of friends about it. And they're going to recommend it to other reading groups. And suddenly your book is out there not just locally, but possibly nationally.
You know, I've never seen a number. You may have. That's why I bring it up. But, the whole idea that I know most books are sold through word of mouth, and I've never seen any kind of percentages. I'm not sure if anyone's done a study of, you know, if they could track, you know, what percentage is word of mouth. But I would expect it to be.
I've seen many years ago, I saw a figure around 80%.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I often say that, and I'm pretty sure that it's very close to being accurate. Certainly from my experience, that's the case. My 1001 Ways to Market Your Books, most of my books are sold simply by word of mouth.
Yeah.
People hear about it, they discover my website, they come and order the book, they order it through a bookstore, however they get it. I don't really care, but I know that almost all my books are sold by word of mouth, because quite honestly, I haven't done much publicity on that book for years. You know, the main thing I do now to promote the book is speaking engagements.
Uh-huh.
But I do very little publicity. I do very little internet marketing on it. I just, you know, I could coast on the word of mouth for it for years.
Yeah, I think just today I was doing a consultation with a client. I recommended a book, you know, Michael Gerber's E-Myth.
Right.
Now it's E-Myth Revisited. And, you know, I've done that probably to 20 people, and, you know, they've gone out and gotten the book, and I didn't think anything of it. But that's really – and what we're talking today is about how do you at least get to that starting gate where, as you say, you build relationships, you now have their attention, and now it's like you're pumping and pumping and pumping, and at a certain point, you don't have to expend nearly as much effort because you've really hit that level.
The goal of all of the marketing that we're going to talk about today is essentially to create that word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because the way you actually make money in publishing is in the backlist sales and the ongoing sales year after year after year. You know, there will be a few people that get to be a flash in the pan and sell, you know, a million copy bestseller or something like that, and then the book disappears and never sells again, you know. But most people make their money because the book sells year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, I mean, there are books that I've just read about, like, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, which is sells, you know, still selling like 500,000 copies.
Yeah.
You know, 40, 50 years after it was published.
That's because my seventh grade son, you know, has to buy that book in school. See, that's a captive audience.
It is a captive audience, and there certainly is part of that. But there's still a lot of people who choose to read those books because they've heard about them.
Yeah, that's true.
And certainly, you know, God bless us if we have a captive audience, you know.
Good. What else? Anything else on the bookstore end of things? Or
those are the primary points that I wanted to make on that. There's certainly a lot more that I could do, but
sure. Well, we could do a whole call, I'm sure, on that. But
but we have so much more to cover that I, you know, and in publicity, I don't really want to spend a lot of time on publicity today. We need to spend some time on it because it is certainly the most important way that people actually find out about your book.
Uh-huh.
And there's 5 major ways that you can do publicity, reach people through PR. There's radio, TV, newspapers, magazines, and then syndicated columnists. And if you want to call a 6th one, you could say the Internet, because obviously the Internet now is very much a PR vehicle. But I'm going to talk more about the Internet in its own category, so I didn't want to really talk about that in terms of PR, per se.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, of those, you know, the radio, TV, newspapers, magazines, and syndicated columnists, the one that I like the best is magazines, simply because you know you have a reading audience, and there's so many magazines, and they're so easy to target because they have very special interests and things like that. For that reason, I like them. And there's so many ways that you can work with magazines, either through interviews, reviews, writing articles, doing excerpts, writing sidebars, and things like that that can be very effective. But it's a long-term strategy because magazines have such a long lead time. And one of the principles that we're talking about today is how to get a fast turnaround.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you're doing fast turnaround, then you want radio. Radio is probably the most effective in terms of a fast turnaround, because radio stations book only, generally speaking, 2 to 4 weeks in advance. Very few radio shows book more than 4 weeks in advance, from my experience.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, you got quick turnaround time. You can call them up and you can be on the radio in 2 weeks. And you can be on as many radio shows as you want to be.
And you, if you're, especially if you're a good guest, they will keep you on, and it's a very intimate medium where people feel like they're hearing your voice, they're hearing your story, they're hearing, they hear you and they say, I like this, you know, I like this person, and
right.
and
so
a lot
has
more.
The strength of bookstore and speaking, you know, appearances, because they actually hear your voice.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, even, you know, though usually, because radio stations typically will, they're very promotion friendly, they're used to, the host often is used to doing commercial voiceovers and things, and they will usually let you give out a website and or a phone number, you know, that where people can order the book, and you can tell them, you know, to go into the bookstore, and so it tends to be very, very effective in that way as well.
But the neatest thing about it is just that immediate, quick turnaround time.
Yeah.
Which can be so valuable in terms of getting out there and getting, you know, some promotion going. And one of the things I do recommend, this goes back to the bookstore sales, is that if you book a radio show in, say, La Crosse, Wisconsin, call up the local bookstore in that area and say, I'll mention your name on the air if you will stock my book.
Yeah, I think I even gave an example. Somebody in your book there, who Mark Field did that, and you're right. It's using the radio interview as the reason for why the local bookstore should stock the book.
Right.
And it's brilliant. I mean, it really does give them that catalyst of, hey, I would bet. Who is this guy? He's going to be on our local station. Okay. Let's.
And the extra value is that it's great value to the radio station too, because it gives them the possibility. It localizes the show more.
Yeah.
And it gives them another potential advertiser if the bookstore's never advertised there before.
Exactly.
If the bookstore notices a great, you know, result from that interview, they're likely to advertise for that radio station. So it's a double benefit for both the store and the radio station.
Yeah.
And obviously, of course, to you.
Yeah.
Because people are going to be more likely to go to their local bookstore to buy from a radio show than to go to an internet site or phone call.
Yeah.
That's been my experience.
And in doing radio, I think, you know, one thing that a lot of authors think sometimes is they just are enthusiastic and they answer questions, they'll sell a lot of books. And what I find with clients when we're working with them is that they have a lot more success when they prepare for the interview and not just answering questions, but actually making a very concerted effort on telling the right kinds of stories and giving out the right kind of information that's going to naturally lead to people wanting to buy the book.
Yes.
I'll give you an example. Let's say somebody's written a book on how to stop smoking, okay? Well, what the typical author does is they start doing interviews and they say, yeah, you know, smoking's a big problem and here are 5 tips to how to stop. Well, see, someone driving along listening to this who's a smoker might say, oh, okay, well, those are 5 good tips, and I guess I'll apply those, and, you know, then once I apply those, maybe I'll buy the book to get some more. And what that author would be better served to do is to start off and tell some stories, give some anecdotes about how horrible lung cancer is. Give us a, you know, get us to feel the problem and how so many people are in denial, you know, about it. And get the listeners to really feel that and say, geez, I don't want that to be me. And then give them a few strategies and talk about mistakes people make when trying to get off smoking. So you've told them mistakes, you've told them, you've given them information, but again, you're persuading them on how they really do need to make a change. And this is a component that I find a lot of authors really just forget about, and it really it affects their sales.
You won't make book sales over the radio unless you create that desire to act.
Yeah.
And you do that by telling the stories,
yeah.
Creating that emotional bond.
Yeah.
And that's far more important than telling them how they can, stop smoking.
Exactly.
You get them to be motivated to it, because if you tell them how, 90% of the people are going to go, oh, okay, that's nice. Just like you said, and then they'll go on to, with their regular lives.
So stories, and what I literally say to people, I say, make a list of what are the things that I need to believe, and what is it that I need to feel to pull to the side of the road and instantly, call and order your book, or, write down, your web address, or, order whatever I have to do. And in your interview, you want to make sure that you practice it and that it really stirs those feelings and those thoughts. One other thought, by the way, on radio publicity is to offer a bonus. If you're not going to drive them to the bookstore, if you're going to have them come directly to your website, say, if people go today, they will also get a free, report in addition to the book. If they,
right.
So you give them a reason to act now rather than procrastinate.
Right, and that's a very important point. It's crucial to getting the actual direct response to happen.
Yeah.
And you could also incorporate the free report. If you wanted to drive bookstore sales, you could incorporate the free report into the back of the book or appendix and say, go to the local bookstore and read the appendix.
Yeah.
And so if you want to drive them into the store, that's one of the things you can do and say, look, you don't have to buy the book. Just read the appendix.
Yeah,
but the reality is that if people pick up the book, they're probably going to buy it.
Right.
And your job is to get them to get into the store and pick it up if you're going to drive bookstore sales rather than Internet. So it depends on your strategy,
right,
where you give the free report and how you approach the interview. But you have to know what points you want to make in the interview.
Yeah.
And then steer the interview in that direction very gently so that no matter what stupid questions the person might ask, you can still take them to the points you want to make.
And something to also let people know is that, our biggest, and I found, we've been publishing Radio TV Interview Report for almost 20 years now, really known as the magazine that radio and TV producers read to find guests. And, in fact, I know a while back, John, when you were in there, what did you get, about 50 calls from stations wanting to do interviews with you?
Well, actually, I booked more than 100 interviews.
Wow, more than 100. And so what we found is, and you can get information on that if you go to freepublicity.com. That's my website, and tells you about different things. But one of the things that we found that from hosts and producers is their biggest fear when they interview an author is that the author is either going to be boring, or that the author is not going to show up for the interview, or the author is going to make the show a nonstop commercial for the book and say, well, in my book on how to stop smoking, I talk about it in my book. The answer to that question is in my book, and you will be off so quickly. So you need to be aware of those concerns and be passionate, go with the flow, but at the same time, know your talking points and what you're trying to create and instill so that it does lead to people buying your book.
And once you get good experience in radio, then it's time to move into TV.
Mm-hmm.
And try to start booking some TV. Now, obviously, the local TV is a little bit easier to do, and certainly you should do that first. But obviously, where you make the big bucks is if you hit a big TV show,
yeah,
whether it's Oprah, Montel, The View, or even ABC or CBS Overnight. I've seen authors on the show there, and they do a good job of doing interviews with them.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's helpful for TV is to realize that it's obviously a visual medium. Some people,
right,
some authors just do radio because they figure they have the perfect face for radio, But for TV, it's how you look is important in the sense that if you can, for a national TV show, they are typically going to want to see a photo of you. You don't have to look like a model, but you have to, look competent and be a pleasant-looking person. So you want to give some thought to your having a professional photograph. You don't have to spend a lot of money, but, do get a photographer to shoot a good picture of you. If you have if you do local, if you got a good segment from a local TV, a lot of times a producer, if you can show that to them, they can see how you come across. And
it's tough, for example, to get booked on Oprah if you don't have a video to show them.
Yeah. Because it's
done on occasion, but they really do like to see that video because they like to see how you carry yourself when you're doing, you know, when you're actually in the situation of being in front of a camera.
Because when a producer books you, they are putting their reputation on the line. And
their job.
And their job. I mean, yeah, that they're putting their job on the line. And so they want to make sure this is show business. And, you know, whether you're on O'Reilly or Oprah or, you know, they want to know that you're going to be a good guest. And so that's why you are smart to start local first.
Get all the kinks out of your system and find out what works and what doesn't work. And you'll know pretty quickly, especially if you're doing live TV, which is often the case in the local place. They'll have a local audience as well. And you'll see when they laugh and when they cry or when they get moved or when they perk up. And those kinds of things tell you that, okay, this is something I need to keep. When they start going glassy-eyed or very quiet and there's not any response, then you know that, okay, I've talked too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the key thing with radio and TV both is that you can't talk too long.
Yeah.
You really have to know your sound bites.
Yeah. And the other thing you need to get publicity is a hook. You know, they need a hook is something where, for example, if you're flipping around the TV and you hear how to be an automatic millionaire on the next Oprah. Well, that's a hook. And actually, David Bach created that as his title because he had done a lot of radio interviews and he had been in our magazine for a while with his Finish Rich series and figured out what kind of headlines attract the media. And here's the thing, the media need to be able to give the audience the reason to hang on through the commercials.
Right.
So if it's why, you know, is spanking child abuse on the next Montel or whatever the topic is.
And if you actually watch a good, you know, national TV show, you'll see in the next segment we'll be talking about, and, you know, even if they're having the same guest on, they'll know exactly what points they're going to be making in the next segment.
Exactly. And so when you can give the media that hook, that's the key, is to create a hook around your book that will really attract. And on page 317 of 1001 Ways to Market Your Books, you'll see some ideas that I've given you there on how to do that. And it's, you know, one way to do that, I'll give you, everybody on the call, a simple way of looking at it is, what is the problem that you solve? For example, we do an event called the National Publicity Summit where people get to meet face-to-face with the producers and present their idea. And we were training authors on how to get ready for that because they're a little bit nervous meeting the media face-to-face in New York City. And there's a pilot named Meryl Gettlein, and she was one of the very first female pilots to rise up the ranks and become a captain for a commercial airline. And we're doing the training call, and I said to her, well, what is it, when people hear that you're a pilot, what's the first question they ask you? And that's a good for anybody to think about. What's the first question people ask you when they hear about what you're doing? And she said, they ask me, is turbulence something I need to worry about? You know? And, of course, you know, none of that is in her book, okay, because her book is her story.
Right.
Well, but again, that's what people want to know. So what we did is we said, look, make that your hook. And sure enough, she you know, met the producers at The View, and she said, look, I can talk about, you know, is turbulence something you should worry about, and this would be great for the holiday travel season. You know, everyone's getting on airplanes. And sure enough, they booked her. And
so what's the answer?
No. Okay. You don't have to worry about it.
All right.
but that didn't stop her from fleshing out the segment by talking about the different kinds of turbulence and whatnot. So, okay. You know, they made a whole segment of it. And now she's been paid after this appearance. She became a regular columnist for USA Today online. She was paid $25,000 to give a speech. I mean, it shows you the power of what we're talking about. Getting publicity and how you can ramp things up quickly, getting national TV, if you just know how to put, you know, come up with a hook and put the pieces together in the right way.
And national publicity is one of the most effective ways to, or any kind of publicity, to build your brand if you want to build a brand, or a recognized expertise.
Yeah.
And one of the main reasons you might want to publish a book is simply as a vehicle for getting publicity. And certainly it is, because once you're the author of a book, you are an instant expert.
Yeah.
Whether, it, you know, even if you wrote a romance novel, now you're an instant expert on romance.
Exactly. Yeah, it's important to be willing to talk about things that are outside your book, but relate to the news, or, you know, it's the type of thing that the media would be interested in hearing about, and it gets you on, but yet it relates to your book.
The worst mistake you can make in publicity is to focus on your book.
Yeah.
You have to focus on what your book offers, the solution it offers, the problem it addresses, and the solution it offers. I see so, you know, 90% of the press releases that come by my desk or that I see on the internet being passed around are horrible. They're so focused on the product or the new website or the new book that there's no story there. There's no reason for me to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Now, if you offer a solution to something, now I'm interested. You identify a problem and offer the solution, I'm interested. I don't care what it is. You know, I'm now interested in it. But so many press releases, I mean, they're not worth the paper they're printed on. And, you know, and I know you have that when in writing for radio TV interview report, how you have to reshape the messages that you get so often from authors.
Yeah.
Get it to be interesting to the radio shows.
Because what we realize, and I want to just encourage everybody to realize, is that you are not selling your book to the producers. They can't interview your book. You're selling yourself as a guest, as a you know, someone with expertise, someone who will help them attract an audience and keep an audience by entertaining them, by shocking them, by making them laugh, making them cry. But that's what you're there to do.
And the same soundbite rules and all that apply to interviews in magazines and newspapers.
Yeah.
You still have to do the same thing. Short answers, succinct, tell a story, give a visual, create an emotion, something like that. Move people, because that's the only reason that they're going to move to buy your book.
One thing on publicity that I want to also make people aware of is it's going to be a lot easier for you to get publicity when you're timely. So if everyone is talking about the election, and you can tie in with the election, then you're there. Or if, for example, if your book can relate to the Academy Awards in some way, maybe you're a speaker on how to give speeches, and you can say, hey, you know, the Academy Awards are going to be next week, and I'll tell you who, you know, which of the celebrities, you know, gave the best speech and why, and mistakes that, you know, they made that could have been avoided. I'll critique the acceptance speeches. Well, you know, you're giving them a reason for them to interview you now and tying in.
Entertainment Tonight's going to book you right away.
Yeah.
Because they're going to ask, well, who gave the best speech, who gave the worst, who spoke too long, who spoke too short. I mean, you could easily play a game with that and create an interesting segment for them that they could play and replay.
Yeah, yeah. And so that, and one thing, for example, like I have a client whose expertise is about is pets and dogs, and he's got he's promoting a DVD on how to survive a dog attack. And one of the things that he's doing and having a lot of success with is if you go, he's finding out the minute a story breaks about a dog attack, if a child was attacked by a dog in a certain area, he then gets in touch with that local media and says, hey, I can talk about how this could have been avoided and comment on, you know, from what we know, you know, comment on the situation. Now, the way he knows about these things, and this is how you can find out about breaking news, is if you go to google.com and you click on news, and then you click on alerts, you can type in a keyword like, you know, attacked by dog, and you will then get emails whenever there's a story or something happening with that phrase. Now you got to be careful because you may get a lot of junk too. You got to do a little experimenting here. But this is a way for you to really be on top of breaking news stories.
And I do the same thing on Yahoo because Yahoo has the same kind of alert service, but they often pick up different stories.
Mm.
So it pays to do it in more than one area to make sure you got everything.
Yeah.
Because I do that for example, for me, I'm interested in self-publishing stories, best-selling book stories, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm doing this. I'm tracking it on both services so that I make sure that I'm covering almost everything.
Yeah.
And I do find that they have different coverage.
Huh, interesting. I didn't know that. See, I'm writing that down. We're all learning stuff on this call.
We have to. That's part of the game.
All right. Anything else you want?
The key thing is you don't want to be known as an ambulance chaser when you're doing the news story kind of thing. You really have to approach it as a service to the media and say, look, I want to help. Help your help your viewers or your readers deal with this particular situation or avoid it in the future.
Uh-huh.
And if you do it right, you're not known as an ambulance chaser. You're known as somebody who's really helping people.
Yeah, and absolutely. In fact, somebody who did that well is a gentleman named Jim Vonmeyer. Now, Jim is an expert among all things on septic tanks. Can you imagine? we all have expertise in something, right? Well, the thing is, and this is a serious issue that he's making people aware of, is that a lot of septic systems are old. And what's happening, unfortunately, is there are kids in their own backyard or people standing in their own backyard where the ground just suddenly gives way and they plunge 20 feet, down and die. And it's one of these things where he wanted to get on national TV and make people aware of this. And what he did, and this is a tactic that anybody on this call can do, is he began collecting newspaper stories about these types of things happening around the country. And then he gave the producer from CBS the examples of these stories and helped put the producer in touch with a mom who had just had her son disappear in her own backyard, and he was on CBS Evening News by showing that this is a national trend. And if you can be part of a trend and show how this is more and more of a problem, that's a great way to get publicity, whether it's TV, print, wherever.
How will any of us be able to go in our backyards now and feel safe?
That's right. That's right.
Just hope you have a commercial sewer system or something.
That's right. That's right.
But then they have their problems too.
Yeah.
So let's go on to the next area. A major area that I wanted to talk about, which was on speaking. And I have five major areas there that I wanted to talk about in terms of using speaking to promote your book and also, of course, to promote whatever else you want to promote. One of the ways is, of course, is to become, and the way to build your experience in speaking is to start locally by speaking to the local Kiwanis or Chamber of Commerce, JC Group, things like that, because they all need speakers and they're hungry for them. All you have to do is say, hey, I'm willing to speak for free, and they'll book you. Because many of them have monthly or sometimes even weekly meetings where they have to have somebody come in and speak for 20 minutes or a half hour.
I want to emphasize something you just shared, which is so true, and that is that like a lot of people who are reading your book and they say they're nervous about approaching, whether it be somebody at the Rotary Club to have them speak, or an adult school, or a media person. And what you just said, John, is so true. Is these people, whether they're media, whether they, put on weekly events, is they do need you. You are doing them a favor by contacting them and letting them know that you have something that's of interest and valuable to their audience.
Right, and in fact, they're desperate.
Yeah.
Every media, for example, has to fill a certain amount of time, newspaper space, magazine space, or whatever, or they don't have a product.
And what I find, I think some people, and a lot of times I find with clients, maybe women struggle with this more, perhaps, you know, of just the idea. It feels unnatural, for, especially for writers, to put themselves forward. They feel like maybe you're hyping yourself or you're, you know, and here's the thing. The media or speakers, bureaus, or people that do conferences will never fault you for trying to put yourself forward and make them aware of what you have. Now, they might fault you for, hey, you're offering me a cookbook and we talk about politics. You know, you haven't done your research. No. But if you know that they have speakers on various business topics and you've got a business topic that you think would be right for them, then people are not going to look down on you for putting yourself forward. And I know it's a bit of a, got us a little bit off track, but it is something that I think holds a lot of people back needlessly.
It's not really off track because you're really doing a disservice to the media or to the speaking groups or the conference organizers if you don't let them know what you have to offer them.
Yeah.
And you're cheating them.
Yeah.
And you really have to start thinking that way. I mean, I had somebody at a seminar, and she was one of those people that wants to give everything away, you know. And I'm going, you're doing a disservice to the people by giving it away because you're making it impossible for you to reach as many people because you can't afford to. You have to go work somewhere else to make a living.
Yeah.
And I say, it's actually doing a service to the people to sell your book or to sell your CD or whatever it is and to sell it for the full price, the value that it has. And I think I finally got through to her that she could actually help more people by actually becoming more commercial in her mindset and in what she was doing. And it's really true. I mean, unless you can survive doing what you're doing, you're not going to reach the audience. And so you have to step up and step forward and tell people, hey, I've got a message. I've got something important to tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
And the best way to get the, you know, when I first started speaking, I would get up in front of people. I mean, I would be shaking. I would be just trembling, essentially, before people would introduce me. Now, if I tremble, it's only because I want to get the person off the stage so I can get on. Because I have so much to share, and I want to share it, and I don't want to listen to somebody introducing me. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if they go on, I want to push them off the stage. And, you know, it comes primarily from two things. One is just the experience of speaking, and you realize that nobody is going to hurt you when you get up in front of them. They actually will be very supportive. But the second thing is it comes from your passion and your desire to share what you have to share. And once you let that flow through you, then you want to get up on stage because you want to help people.
I remember having you at a seminar, and I was next, John, and you really, you know, you refused to get off the stage.
They have a lot of trouble with that. I keep begging for more time and things like that.
And the thing is, when you have 1,001 ways, see, that's...
it's just very tough.
That's right, that's right.
Another way to, you know, so the first way to really build up your, start to build your speaking career is to speak locally to garden clubs, friends of the library, things like that to build up your experience. But eventually you want to graduate to start teaching like learning annex courses or other kinds of local learning centers. And there's everywhere around the country there's something like that. If it's not called the learning annex, it's called something like Discovery U or Open University or Free University or something like that. And those are important venues because not only do you get to speak to the, you know, 20 or 30 people that come to you, but they advertise your name and your course and your book title to hundreds of thousands of people in their publications that are given away free and are blowing along the street, you know, things like that. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, if you get into Learning Annex in L.A., you're going to be exposed to over 500,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's really valuable. Plus, you get paid, and you can—they will allow you to sell your book off of the, you know, while you're talking.
And I notice that so many authors feel like they have to get their book done before they now qualify to get speaking engagements. And
that's not true.
It's not true, and it's a huge detriment because I find that the people who have done a lot of, when you get out there and start doing speaking, I would tell you before you even write your book, go out and give some talks. Give some talks on the topic if it's a nonfiction book, because you're going to get this instant feedback. You're going to see what the questions are that people have, and you're going to end up delivering a message now. It's going to be more targeted. And now when you write your book, you're going to just be more on target with what people want. And when you look at people like Deepak Chopra and Tony Robbins and Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, Robert Kiyosaki, they began by speaking and speaking for free. And getting that experience. And it's probably, I find it a big chief distinguishing mark between the those who are very comfortable speaking and those who aren't. I mean, you really do see that the ones who are good speakers and have done that really do have a big edge.
Yes, they do. And the other side of the coin there, in terms of not having to wait for the book, is that you can always offer something else.
Yep.
You can offer a short booklet that you sell for $10, or you can sell an audio CD of a previous talk, or you could do any number of things that you can be offering them to for sale as you're writing your book. The thing that I get frustrated with sometimes with authors is that they get so stuck on selling the book that they forget the book is just the beginning point.
Yeah.
Because the book is really just setting the stage for selling all kinds of rights, creating all kinds of ancillary products, and spin-offs and so on, that really start to build your career and build your actual ability to make money.
Yeah, and I even advise my clients, for example, when they speak, I say, look, you know, do not just sell a book at the event. Have it be either they get the book and some other information as part of a kit or a coaching program, because people who hear you speak, when you do it in the right way, they will spend several hundred to several thousand dollars. And, you know, to just have them, to just offer them a book often is a big mistake, you know, depending
right.
on what people have.
In fact, last summer at the Million Dollar Author Conference, there was a woman who had a program on how to improve your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to write a book on it, and she was so focused on the book when I could tell her right away that, look, the book isn't enough.
Right.
First of all, I'm not going to read a book on how to improve vision. I want some hands-on teaching. Either I want to be coached by you, or I want to see videos of you doing these exercises, much more than a book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the book can establish the need for it and so on, so a book is certainly a crucial part of it. But her ancillary possibilities were much more valuable. Personally, I would rather spend $400 having her, hiring her as a coach to teach me than for me to read the book.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the need to improve my vision. I'd really love to not have to wear my glasses. and I'd be willing to pay to have her coach me rather than sit down and spend the time writing a book and trying to figure out if I'm doing the exercises right.
Yeah, and one of the things I do, for example, is I show, when I speak, I hold up a book about hiring, how to hire employees, and I say to the audience, how much do you think this book is? And they say, oh, about $25, $30. I say, okay. Then I hold up this package of, it consists of three videos, eight audios, four workbooks, and I say, this is a kit on how to hire great employees. How much is this? And, of course, people have no idea because they have no frame of reference.
Right.
And it ends up that this kit sells for $1,000. And then I make the point to them, I say, now, is that too much to spend on making a great hire? If you're hiring somebody and you can do it in less time, if you can find a really great employee and you're a company, is it worth it? And this author gets that. And the neat thing about it is, he doesn't have to do nearly the amount of work to create his kit that a author does for a book, because he can record the audio quickly. The workbooks were really transcripts largely of some things he had done, and you can produce that very quickly. And so he doesn't have say, the cachet of an author. He doesn't have a book in the store. Actually, in his
but
case,
he could always create it.
He could add that. Actually, in his case, he does. But my point is that in terms of making money fast and speaking, I would definitely, A, offer them something. A lot of people don't do that. And offer them a special package of some other stuff, tapes, coaching program, workbooks, and or put several things together and charge $95. I sell my publicity kit for $595, and I put some critiques and coupons for some other services in there that they can get, and most people on this call can definitely do that.
Yes, because you're creating extra value.
Yeah.
And then other ways that you can do speaking, of course, is to speak at other people's seminars where you are either paid or given the opportunity to sell your books in the back of the room and make money that way. And there are many people who make more money selling product on the back of the stage than they ever do getting paid to speak. And some people actually prefer not being paid to speak because they know they can make more money selling product.
Yeah.
A fourth way of speaking to make money, of course, is develop your own seminars and give those wherever you want to. And those, you know, you can make good money that way. And in addition, either make your book a part of the product or sell it in addition to that. I'm surprised by how many people attend my $500 blast-off seminars who haven't read my book. And I'm going, why did they spend $500 with me when they haven't read my book? You know? But it's because I built up a good, strong reputation, a good word of mouth.
And people do learn differently. For example, I find my brother, Bill, he's a book reader. I mean, he just is reading books all the time.
And you're not.
Well, I'm not nearly as much. I like
to travel more than he does.
I like to go to seminars. I'm an auditory. I like to listen in my car to CDs. I like to go and immerse myself for a day. I mean, I would much rather, you know, spend $500 to immerse myself in something for a day and be focused, and then have to read a book a lot of times.
Right.
You know, it just
right.
depends.
So because even in reading a book, you still have to figure out how to use it.
Yeah.
I mean, I charge $500 an hour for consulting, mm-hmm. but a lot of people hire me for that, and often it's just regurgitating my book in some sense, but I'm applying it specifically to their needs and what they need.
Yeah.
And what they're doing with their particular book, and it makes sense because for them, they go, I can't do all 1,001 ways, and I never recommend anybody try it. The only one that I know that maybe has done close to all of them is Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, and I know they did a lot of them because they told me.
Yeah.
But most people, I say, focus on 5 or 10 of the best ways that are right for your book, your talent, what money you have to spend, what time you have to devote to it, and so on. That's worth hiring somebody to get that kind of focus. And that's true for anything that you're doing, whatever kind of service you're offering, whatever kind of book you're doing. There's a reason, there's a value to having people actually pay you to do consulting or coaching for them.
I actually helped somebody get started with this in that I purchased a book on nutrition, and this nutritionist had some really good recipes and some things, and I actually did, I happened to meet her as well. And a couple of days later, I'm looking through, and I just had questions about, well, can I substitute this ingredient for this? And I had the idea that maybe if I could email her each day what I was eating, then she could give me tailored advice about what to be eating. And that really launched her on offering a whole new service to readers of her book, and
right.
It's a great way to think about after they buy your book, or even maybe before. What else can you offer that would be even more profitable that people would pay more money for?
And everybody needs that. Even like the woman pilot who's writing the memoir,
yeah.
She has so much more that she could offer because I bet she didn't remember all the stories that she could have told.
Yeah,
in her book and. If I liked her book, I might be interested in a story a week or a story a month that she has that she could collect not just from herself but from other women pilots or from other men pilots.
Uh-huh.
And if I liked her book, I'm going to be interested in it. And I know of at least 100,000 other people that would be interested in aviation stories, because I know there are websites that have that kind of visitors.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So she's got other options. So even if you're writing fiction, even if you're writing poetry, there's other things that you can offer people that will help them, you know, and give you an opportunity to make additional income. One other thing I wanted to talk about, well, two other things in speaking. One is devoted to children's books, and that is that schools do pay children's authors to come in and do speaking and do reading of their book to classes and to the media rooms and so on and so forth. And I know authors, children's book authors, who are making more money speaking and doing these kind of events than they are from the book sale. But the other thing is, which I know you're a big fan of, and that is teleseminars.
Mm-hmm.
And the value of doing those, because there's so many people that really want to have that immediate contact with people that can't necessarily travel but would love to listen to you speak on a telephone.
And we're doing we're doing that right now.
Yes, and by doing it, you might charge people for it. You might do it free and then charge them later if they want to hear it again. Or people who didn't make the seminar, you've created a new product. Every time you do a teleseminar, you've created a new audio product that you can sell.
I'm sure.
My $5 and $10 reports started as free reports that I gave away in promoting my book, 1001 Ways to Market Your Books. Now I sell them for $5, $10, $50 as a collection, et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
Because there's still valuable information.
Yeah. Yeah, teleseminars, what's wonderful is that people get to know you. You're in complete control, generally, of what you do. People can, now in this one, we're recording this, but we also do a lot of teleseminars where people can ask questions and they're live, and you can even have a whole program that could be a series of 8 teleseminars, and you could base it on your book or on your book concept, and people will pay you. We've had a whole bunch of things where people have paid $2,000 to learn how to do something through a series of teleseminars.
Right, and it can be an incredibly great promotional tool. But, you know, I did a teleseminar on how to market your novel. And it was a free teleseminar. We had something like 400 or 500 people on the call.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have it as a $30 audio product that I can sell on CD. But I also I used it. I started it because I was promoting a $300 seminar that I was giving. But now I have not only that free promotional thing, but now I can sell it for $30. Plus now I'm also going to be selling the seminar as a series of DVDs.
That's great.
And those are the kinds of things that any of us can do who have written a book, because we have so much content. None of us have put into the book everything that we know. We can't possibly do it. Even with my book, which is 704 pages long, I can't begin. I keep taking things out because I can't fit it all in.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the problem that you're always faced with in writing a book if you know a lot. And that content, rather than going to waste, can be repurposed in different ways.
Exactly. I know somebody who did several teleseminars, just like actually recorded it. And maybe we don't have anybody in this call right now because we're recording it, but he had maybe 3 or 4 others. But the whole reason he was doing it was that he was going to get it transcribed. And he was going to make the audio and the transcription available as a product that he could sell at the back of the room. And that's exactly what I was talking about earlier, is quick ways to create product. There's a company called idictate.com. And if you can send them an MP3, you can play a tape or a CD right into the phone, and within 24 hours they will send you back at a transcription, and it's only a penny a word. So it's amazing what you can do quickly.
And they're doing that primarily by software. So it's not costing them much to do it.
You know, it's interesting. I think in their case, that's what I thought, but I think they get a live person for iDictate. I don't know. I know there's a whole bunch of different services out there. Yeah.
Then they're probably doing it in India or Philippines.
Maybe.
Or something
like that technology certainly exists, and if they're not using it, others do.
I didn't know about that. So now I have to write something down.
You'll love it. iDictate.com. I actually did my whole publicity kit that way. I scheduled time to talk about the different topics, and then that got me going with my rough draft to edit. And it's great for any of you who are, you know, you're like me, you prefer talking than writing. See, John and I, you and I are probably different in this way.
I'm obviously a talker.
You're a talker too, okay. Okay.
But I am more of a writer than you are. And certainly there are people that have a really hard time writing a book but have incredible content.
It's a great way of getting started, just talking, sitting back, and then, you know, boom, just send it to iDictate, and now you've got your first draft.
In fact, I tell many people, if they're having trouble writing a book, I say, start by having a friend talk to you and just ask you questions and record it.
Perfect.
Because you can easily create. I mean, it's so easy to create product if you want to create it. You just have to have somebody that can ask you good questions.
Yeah.
And then you just answer them back. And all of us have a certain amount of expertise in some area, some passion that we have, that other people would want to know that information.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to create the product if you want to, and then just refine it over time.
It's always nice to look at things as version one, because perfectionism will always keep you from getting anything out. If you look at this, hey, this is version one of my book. This is version one of my product, and I will improve it. How can I, you know, all your editions, I'm sure each edition of 1001 Ways has gotten better and better each time.
Yes, yes. Here's one other secret in terms of creating content where you don't have to do a thing, or almost nothing, is you can interview other people.
Yeah.
And you can create content that way that you can sell.
Yeah.
And you just give them the right to sell it also, and they'll be happy to do it. I've done that with many people, including the novel seminar that I did. Somebody else arranged the teller seminar, did all the promotion for it. I sat back and appeared to do the seminar.
Uh-huh.
I gave the content, and now we both have a product to sell. That's valuable to our audiences, and we reach different audiences, so it works fine.
Yeah. You know, let me ask you something. One thing, to kind of shift gears, because I know, I think...
We still have some more to cover yet.
I know. So I want to shift gears for a minute, and we'll come back to the one of the things that people have, I think there might be a lot of people on this call who are either thinking about or have used a print-on-demand publisher. And what are some things that you would say would be kind of helpful for them to know, to be aware of, that could help them
be
successful?
The key thing with working with a print-on-demand publisher is to retain rights to the book. So that at any time where you start to have success and some publisher comes along and wants to buy the rights, or you want to start producing a commercial edition of the book, you know, where you actually print with an offset press, you need to have those rights come back to you quickly and cleanly. And that means that you need to retain the rights. And that's probably the most important thing, I think, in any contract with a POD publisher, is that you own all the rights to the book. And at any time can take it from them and repurpose it in any way you want. Now, the neat thing about print-on-demand is it's a great way to test the market.
Yeah.
And it's also an incredible way, especially if you're doing version one of a book and you know you're going to do 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 before you do your final book, print-on-demand is a great way to do that. I have a book called John Kramer's Self-Publishing Hall of Fame. And that just I keep adding new people to it. It doesn't make sense for me to publish it any other way than print on demand until I finally decide, okay, I'm going to, you know, hard copy it for 2 months, you know, 2 years. I have enough content now. It's a 212-page book right now. I sell it as an e-book, which is another neat format to use to create product and start selling things instantly. But then print-on-demand is another great way to test the market in a format that people are very comfortable with.
And for example, it even lets you go after different niche markets. If you want to have a book to help you, let's say in my case, if I wanted to start doing speaking, I want to speak about how lawyers could get publicity. Well, I could have a book, and maybe, you know, the book's about getting publicity, but it could be, you know, retitled, you know, The Lawyer's Guide to Getting Publicity, and has a right. bonus chapter. And then I go after another group, The Mortgage Broker's Guide to Getting Publicity. And most of the book would stay the same, just certain elements would change.
And print-on to give you the capability to do that.
Yeah.
And to do it cost-effectively. And I do know other people that are doing kinds of things like that that really make sense for print-on-demand. And e-books is another way to do the same kind of thing, where, especially if you have an audience that's comfortable using the computer and doesn't mind reading a good, useful information report via the computer.
And the other thing, by the way, is I also do find that authors, they come to me and they've printed maybe 5,000 copies of their book, and they're, you know, help me get publicity or help me start generating sales. And as I look at it, it's like, oh, if I just had changed their title and they had just changed a few things, they would have a book that was much easier to market and get publicity for.
Well, any of us who consult in the area hit that nightmare more than once. And
so
probably at least 25% of the time we hit that problem.
And it's nice, that's why I like starting with POD, because you can start to get a feel, hey, I've got this book, and you can start down the road, and if you want to make changes, you can do that. It is a great way to test. So anyway, let's get back to, I know we've digressed a bit, but hopefully it's been a valuable digression on a number of levels. Let's get back to, are we done?
Now I'd like to move to the Internet.
Okay, Internet.
Marketing via the Internet. I think that it's actually possible to spend a full year just marketing your book via Amazon. And it could pay off to do so. I think you could spend an entire year full-time just marketing on Amazon and really blow the socks off of your book.
And when you say marketing on Amazon, what do you mean?
Amazon offers so many possibilities for marketing. They allow you to, for example, now they allow the authors to do blogging on Amazon. You can pay for position so that your book can be associated with a best-selling book, and you can buy that spot so that you can say, this book goes better with this book or something like that, and you can associate your book with the bestseller. But there's ways to do it also. There's at least four or five different ways that I've discovered that you can actually associate your book with best-selling books. One of the ways, of course, is to review books. You know, any book that's in your subject area that's already a bestseller, you should be reviewing it and then saying, hey, I'm the author of such and such, and provide the link back to your book page. And they allow you to do that because that's a good link. You can also do what they call list mania, where you can create lists, essentially bibliography, lists of books that you like on that particular subject. And every book that you list in that list mania, you will have that list mania appear on those book pages in a rotation. You know, 20 lists that list this particular book, only three are going to be featured at any one time. But the books will get rotated in and out of different list mania. It's a way for you to begin to associate. Now, when you create that list, obviously the first book that's mentioned is yours. Then comes the best-selling books, and then comes other books that you think are valuable. This is a great service to the people that come to Amazon, but it's a way to associate your book with the best-selling books that are already out there on your subject area. There are too many other ways to talk about it in the time that we have. But, you know, the one other key strategy, of course, is what they call the Amazon bestseller campaign strategy. But, again, that, too, is almost like a, well, you know, you've done teleseminars on it, that hour and a half ones just on that subject.
Oh, yeah. There's even the people we interviewed actually did a whole 8-part series on it. But the principle, just so people understand it, is the idea that you get other people to send out. You line all this up, and on a given day, you get other people who have email lists to send emails to their lists, encouraging people to buy your book on a given day. And there are some specific ways where you can offer them. There are people that will give you bonuses that you can give for free. So, for example, like this CD, we could offer somebody for, this as a free bonus that somebody might get when they, buy a book.
When I do my Amazon campaign.
There you go. Or anybody that had just, let's say they had another book, somebody had a book on helping how to make money with your writing, and they contacted me. I could say to them, hey, I'll give you this, free CD. Well, the point is that one day you get an email that says, if you buy this book on a given day, you can receive up to $700 or $2,000 worth of bonus products and things. And so you're really incentivizing people to go and order the book, and that drives the sales up to the bestseller status. And some people who've really perfected this are Peggy McCall and Randy Gilbert, and their website is www.yourownbestseller.com. yourownbestseller.com. And I know, John, I know you talk a lot about this in your 1001 Ways book.
Well, it's such a great tool to get known and to get recognized and to actually be able to say that your book was a bestseller.
Absolutely.
The key to it is the number of people that the email goes out to. You really do have to develop a good list of email owners and bloggers that will talk about it on that specific day and send people to it. And that means developing relationships with those people, and that is a key to it. If you're sending out 100,000 people, you're not going to get on the best, number one.
Yeah.
You have to sell out the, send out the 500,000 or 1,000,000 or more to get to be number one. And but one of the key things to understand in the whole process is that you have to give the people that are going to send the email out a reason, a benefit too, for why they should be doing it. Why is your book important to their readers, and so on? You got to give them a reason to join in on this campaign, and that's part of what Peggy and I'm going blank on his name.
Randy Gilbert.
Randy. That's part of what they teach. Is that whole process of how to build the relationship, how to give them the incentive, and so on to participate in this campaign, and. The whole thing, the neat thing about the Internet is that it is essentially the essence of what marketing is all about, and that is creating relationships. And in the Internet, anybody who's successful on the Internet and marketing on the Internet has to do that. They have to create and nurture relationships, and they can't do people wrong. If you lie, cheat, steal, or anything like that, you will not be successful on the Internet for long because your relationships will deteriorate.
Yeah.
They will disappear. So once if you're going to be successful marketing on the Internet, you have to be highly ethical. And that's neat because then that if there's somebody who's been marketing for a while on the Internet, you get a pretty good trust factor there.
Yeah.
Because they can't survive in any other way.
Absolutely.
There's a couple other things you can do on Amazon. I'll just talk about a couple other things. One is that they also have a thing called So You'd Like To. You can create your own guide. So you can say, here's the 5 steps on how to create publicity on the Internet for books. Let's say you did a guide like that. And as part of that, you might mention some different books. Well, now that book will then be featured on different websites. For example, I wrote a book on how to self-publish and create a bestseller. Now, in that, I featured a whole bunch of books on self-publishing and creating bestsellers. Now my name is featured on all those things, because I don't, have a book on, I haven't written the self-publishing manual like Dan Pointer, but yet everybody who self-publishes needs my book. So I want to link in some way my knowledge, my experience, my name to those books. And one of the ways to do that, is the So You Like to Guide. Then there's also the customer reviews. Amazon now offers the ability to tag books, and you can do that. You can join in on the customer discussions, and they're now allowing people to do discussions. There's the Amazon Connect program. There's the citations. Every book that you list in your bibliography, your book will be featured on. If your book has been scanned, if your bibliography has been scanned into the Search Inside the Book program at Amazon, your bibliography, every book you mention, your book will be mentioned on those book pages. So there's lots of different things you can do. There's the reading group guides, there's the Amazon Fishbowl, there's the Amazon Wire, which is an original podcast about books. There's so many different ways that you can use Amazon that if you really wanted to spend time on it, you could do incredible things just on Amazon selling books. And a good bestseller campaign alone creates, we'll sell anywhere from 500 to 1,000 books in a very short time.
Yeah. It's an incredibly powerful medium now, isn't it, with this internet and with Amazon. It's exciting.
And, there's a lot of programs that you could do the same thing. You could spend a year on Google promoting your book, because Google offers so many different abilities of using Google to do things, including their, the blogspot.com, which is Google-owned, the enhancing your site so that you're highly placed in Google, using the different paid advertising programs of Google, Google Video, which is an incredible tool. If you create a video about your book or a flash program, you can put it up on Google Video. There's so many tools that you can now use in terms of the internet that you could spend a full time just on Amazon or Google promoting your book. But I think the best way to promote your book on the internet is very, very simple. That is to use Google or Yahoo or both to search to find out what are the top 30 websites for your key search terms, and then create relationships with those key websites. That's the most important thing you could do on the internet for your book, for the long term. For the short term, the best thing you can do is the Amazon sales campaign. Over the long term, you want to create relationships with those top 30 websites for every key search term that you think people will be looking for your website. Why do you want to do that? Well, one reason is because if you create relationships with those top 30 websites, suddenly your website will be one of those top 30 websites. And how do you create relationships? You offer them some sort of good content, some sort of value to what their mission is for what they're doing. If it's a commercial site, you want to offer them some good content that's valuable, that will bring more people to their website. If it's an amateur website or a passionate hobbyist site, you want to offer them some sort of great value in terms of the content that would be relevant to their passion. And half of the sites that are going to be top 30 sites may not be commercial sites. They may be just passionate hobby sites. And you want to create those relationships so that they will interview you, review your book, feature your free articles when you write a new free article, feature an excerpt from your book, feature, and in all those things, providing links again back to your website.
Another thing I would suggest, too, is that you consider the Google AdWords. If you can, look at what it might cost you to, often you can find keywords that are inexpensive where people click. they pull you up in Google, as John said, there's, you know, the 30 top websites, but over on the right, if you can pay to be one of the people mentioned on the right. And if you then direct them to a web page where you capture their email address and have some copy and a letter that sells your ebook and maybe some other things, there are a lot of people who are being really successful at testing that out and ramping that up and making a good bit of money and selling a lot of books in ebook form that way.
And the neat thing about Google AdWords is that you can limit how much your exposure is in terms of cost. You can say, this is my budget for the month, and things like that, so that you don't have to spend a lot of money, and you can still get click-throughs that will result in sales.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, if you're going to do Google AdWords, you have to have a good sales page. You can't just send them to the first page of your website and expect them to buy as a result of that. You really do want to send them to a specific sales page that really does a good direct marketing letter that sells your book or whatever package you're offering.
One thing I would recommend, and John, you may have some recommendations as well, is there's a good book by Yannick Silver and Jim Edwards called 33 Days to Online Profits, 33 Days to Online Profits, and they really take you by the hand. I don't know if, John, you may have some other resources you'd recommend as well for that.
Well, that's a good place to start, and once you get there, you'll find out about others.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different ways to do it. One of the key other things that you want to do in terms of creating relationships is also to create relationships with any major blogs in your subject area. And blogs are basically frequently updated websites. That's one way to talk about them. Most of them are created using what's called blogging software that makes it easy to do so that you don't have to think about the mechanics behind it. You just write your blog and post it. But blogs can be very influential. Probably one of the most influential around is the Seth Godin blog that he has, which is wonderful. And he's often referring to other bloggers, to other email, to newsletters, to other websites. And if you can get featured once on his, you know, that's goldmine for you because a lot of people read his blog. Some bloggers have 30,000, 100,000, up to several hundred thousand readers every day. And if you can create a relationship with them where you're in their blog line or something like that, that's great, incredible value. Or if you link to their blog, suddenly you'll appear on their blog as well. Because there's a lot of blog software now that has what's called a trackback mechanism, which essentially tracks who else mentions their blog. And the blogging software will automatically feature any other blogs that comment on that blog and feature an excerpt of that comment on the original blog. Well, that's a great way to get guilt by association, you know, the star. You know, you can comment on the famous blogs, and suddenly you could be appearing in front of their audience as well. Now, those kinds of things are incredibly valuable, and it's all part of building relationships. 5 years ago, somebody came to me and said, I'm stopping selling books in bookstores. I'm going to spend the next year just marketing on the Internet. And I said, you know, that makes sense. And nowadays, it even makes more sense because, as I've already said today, I could see spending a whole year just on Amazon or a whole year just on Google, really working hard to make your book totally visible on Amazon or on Google. And it could be much more useful than trying to sell through bookstores, which are, to be quite honest, a real bear, especially if you have to work with distributors, which are the evil enemy of the book publishing industry, in some way. They're tough to work with. I've worked with one because bookstore sales are just sort of like icing on the cake for me. And so for me, I hand it all over to the National Book Network, and they take care of my bookstore sales. And I can go on to do the things that really make me money. But I still make good money selling to bookstores, so I like still having that. But boy, if I had to feed and nurture my distributor, I would stop right away. I would forget about bookstore sales, quite honestly, because I don't want to spend the time. Now, if I have a novel, poetry book, memoir, I'm going to be doing a lot with bookstores. If I have a cookbook, I'm going to be doing a lot with bookstores, et cetera, et cetera. But for my book, which is so special interest, I could live without bookstores and still make lots and lots of money. So it depends on your book how much time you spend on bookstores. But I think that everybody can benefit, and the most immediate benefit, turnaround times in terms of making money, is going to be found on the Internet.
Essentially, we've covered the Internet, we've covered publicity, we've covered speaking.
There's two more points I want to make on the Internet.
Bookstores, we've got to wrap up pretty soon because we're running short on time.
One thing on the Internet is offering free articles. Post your article everywhere you can. And the neat thing now is that Amazon allows you to do your own blog, so you can put up any free articles you want up there. MySpace.com, Squidoo.com, Wikipedia. There's all kinds of user-generated websites where you can put your content up as part of that user-generated content and to then get exposure to all kinds of people. The other thing is that if you're going to market on the Internet, you have to create a good website and have some sort of email newsletter to maintain regular contact with your visitors. Encourage them to sign up for your newsletter. For example, one of the reasons we're giving away this free audio teleseminar is because we want you to sign up for our email newsletters. And in order to get this, you had to do that. That's one of the values.
That's something that any other author, you know, everybody could use, is to offer your reader a special bonus teleseminar and have them go to a page and, you know, give you their email address so you can stay in touch with them and build a relationship, more of a relationship with them.
Right. And then once you've got that email newsletter, what you're really creating with your email newsletter, there's two things you're creating. One is you're creating your word-of-mouth army. You're creating that army that's going to hear about all your new books, who's going to be hearing from you regularly with good content, who when they think of the book marketing expert, they're going to be thinking about me. And so I've got 10,000 people in my email newsletter that find out everything new that I'm doing, my new seminars, et cetera, et cetera. When somebody comes to any one of those 10,000 people who read my newsletter, they're going to say, and they're asking questions about book marketing, they're going to say, well, I'm not the person to answer. You should be contacting John Kramer. And the reason they'll remember my name is because they get my email tip of the week. And so my name is going to be in front of them on a regular basis. The second option I have is to build in a great customer list of potential buyers for any new product that I create. And you can do the same thing. And you should do the same thing. Otherwise, you're wasting your website if you're only making one sale from it and then losing that customer forever. So that was it for that.
Okay. As usual, here I am pushing you off the stage here, as usual. I think we covered all the main areas, did we not?
No, there's one other, and that was the direct marketing and special sales. But there were 9 points I wanted to make under that, and I don't know if we can do that. Basically, why don't I just name the nine, and then we can, if you want to ask us some questions on a few of those, we can do that.
Well, let's go for it. I think we might be able to get them in, so go ahead.
One of the ways is actually doing direct marketing, actually sending out letters to people and encourage them to buy your book. That's a very specialized way, but it is, if there's one way to print money in publishing, it is through direct mail. If you know how to test properly and do your testing and so on, it's sort of like Google AdWords that way. If you know how to do Google AdWords right, you can print money on the Internet. Because essentially you can test and test and test until you know that for everybody who clicks your Google AdWord, you're going to make $5. So that ad is worth, you know, you can pay up to $2 or $3 for that ad because you know you're going to make $5 off of it. That's what you can do, the same thing with direct mail. And they can be very powerful. And the sad thing with the Internet is that fewer and fewer people are using direct mail to market books. In fact, some of the great direct marketers of books like Time Life Books are no longer in the business, which is really kind of sad to me. But anyway, I wrote a whole book on that called The Complete Direct Marketing Source Book, which is now out of print because I sold it to a big publisher and they didn't know what to do with it. So someday I'll rewrite it and sell it to you guys again. Another thing you can do is sell the catalogs, mail order catalogs, and that can be you can sell anywhere from 50 copies at a time to several hundred thousand copies in some cases to catalogs that will sell your book to their customer list. And, there are catalogs in every subject area. You can use Google to find them. And then all you do is track them down, get a sample of the catalog, and look to see where your book would fit in that catalog. And what you want to do, of course, is target those catalogs that are targeting your audience. And you'll have to make some judgment on that. But then find out where your book would fit in that catalog, and then send a letter to the catalog saying, here's where my book would fit, and here's why it would fit there, and why you would be better off taking this product off and putting my book on that page. If you can do it that specifically, you'll have a very easy chance of selling to that catalog, because the catalog knows the exact number of sales per square inch of their catalog that they're making. They know the dollar value of every square inch in their catalog. And if you can show them that your square inch analysis is better than theirs, they will pick up your book. Another market that you can use is what are called display marketers. The best known company in this field is Books or Fun, which is headquartered in Fairfield, Iowa, where I used to live. They're a great company. If they pick up a book and they really decide to take it nationally, they'll sell 80 to 100,000 copies of the book. They'll pay you a pittance. They'll pay you about 20% of what the book is worth, the retail price. But the incredible word-of-mouth value of it alone is worth it. Plus, it allows you to increase your print run, get your print costs down. It does all kinds of things. But the most important thing it does is it increases your word-of-mouth value because it gets your book into the hands of so many more people. You can find Books or Fun address on my website at bookmarket.com. And there's other ones like Imagination and a number of others like Readmore that do the same thing in Canada. You can also sell your book to corporations, sell them to nonprofits. The key thing here is that you have to address what their need is and how your book would fit their need. And, again, this could be a whole teleseminar. In fact, I think we've done one on this before. So I'm not going to go into full detail on that right now unless Steve asks me some questions in a few minutes. Another area that you can sell in is specialty retailers. This means gourmet gift shops, into the home improvement stores, into Kinko's, and I just read now that Starbucks is going to start selling books. And there's lots of options, and where does your book fit, and where should it fit in these other specialty retail outlets, craft stores and gift stores and so on and so forth. The seventh area under this area is the sell to the big box retailers. This could be very valuable, especially if you have the right book. If you get a book into Walmart, you're going to sell 30, 50,000 copies right off the bat. The same is true if you sell into Costco or Sam's or one of the other big box retailers. These are tough to get into and very risky because they'll put a book into the marketplace and hold it for 2 to 3 weeks, and if it doesn't sell, they send it all back to you, and it'll come back to you in non-resellable condition. So it's a high-risk way, but it's also a high-return way if it works for you. And but it's high-risk, and it's not easy to get into them. But if you do get in, it can be very valuable. Point number eight is right sales, which I've, again, done in a separate two-hour talk on, so I can't do everything I want. But I'll give you one hint here, and that is that the major New York publishers are actually in the business of selling rights. They make their profit on selling rights. They lose money publishing books. If you would look at the bottom line, if you could really find their actual books, you would find out that they lose money publishing books. They make money selling rights. And you can do the same thing, because You don't have to create the audio of your book. You don't have to create the video. You don't have to create the movie of your novel. You can sell the rights to somebody else to do that. I'll give you an example. The first book author to become a billionaire is J.K. Rowling. Now, she made about $200 million of that billion-plus dollars selling books. The rest was on ancillary subsidiary rights. That's how much rights can be valuable. I'm hoping to become the second billionaire.
That's good. That's good.
Point number nine is selling your book overseas, foreign rights sales. These can be very valuable because for most of us, we're not going to sell very many books overseas. With the Internet, we can sell more than we used to. But the reality is that most of us aren't going to sell a lot. So sell the rights because you can get anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 per country that you sell it in. And it's found money, essentially, because you weren't going to sell your book into that country. You certainly weren't going to do a translation into Chinese or into Bulgarian or something like that. So sell the rights for anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 and pocket that money and have a nice dinner on me. So those are some of the points that I wanted to make. Steve, if you want to go into any of those in a little bit more detail, we can.
I think the thing is, the challenge we've got is we're just short on time because
I know.
So we'll need to have that be it. But I know that people can get more information from you at bookmarket.com, from me at freepublicity.com. And it's just been fun to cover these different areas with you. And I'm looking forward to getting feedback from folks as they listen to this. And
what we covered were actually 30 different ways.
Yeah.
I counted them. I didn't number them as I talked to you guys, but there were 30 different ways that we talked about. In fact, we talked more about more than just that.
And I think we over-delivered in just giving a lot of good stuff. One thing I would, it can be overwhelming, all of these ideas, and one of the things that I would encourage you to do is to focus on an area, but also the thing about selling marketing books is it's a lot of little things, and I'd encourage people to think about getting an intern from a local college to read John's book, go through some of these ideas, and train them to be your own personal book publicity, book marketing person to help you do, whether it's on the Internet, whether it's publicity.
Or a stay-at-home mom,
yeah,
who was maybe professional in her former life, but now is staying at home with her kids for a few years,
yeah,
and wants to do some work, and somebody like that would be perfect for you.
Exactly, and it can be very enjoyable for them, and it can be a real win-win. So, hey, this has been fun as always, John. I'm sure we'll be doing calls real soon in the future.
But the thing is that I had so much more to say. And the problem is that I do. I mean, I give 3-day seminars on book marketing, and I still don't have enough time. You know, literally, it's true. And the thing is, though, that the key thing to come away from it is that marketing is all about building relationships and decide what you want to focus in on, given your time, your talent, your money you have, the talent that you can hire, et cetera, and decide where you want to focus and really focus on 5 or 6 ways to market your books and really spend the time to do it right. That's far more important than trying to spread yourself too thin.
And that's a great note to end on. Thanks again.
Sure.